Welcome to Taking the Lead Podcast. This is your host, Pamela Burkett-Jones, career strategist, certified coach, consultant, speaker, and professor. Today, my show is all going to be about your urge. If you have that calling inside, I know some people want to start a for-profit business, but maybe your call is for a nonprofit business. And the person I have today is Deitra Spears Johnson. She's called the Nonprofit Incubator. And Deitra, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can you kind of like tell the guests more about you, tell my listeners more about you and what you do?
I am, like Pamela said, I'm Deitra Spears Johnson. I am what I would consider a nonprofit expert. And I take that title because I started my nonprofit, Heart to Hand Incorporated, here in Prince George's County in 1999 with my best friend. And fast forward, over the last 21 years, we've been able to build the nonprofit from in our kitchen to a $2.5 million effective, compliant nonprofit organization that is providing essential services in the community. And so my background really is that I didn't really know a lot about nonprofits when I first started, and I had to learn just by doing. And I want to share that with you all so that maybe you won't have to get as many knocks as I did. And that's my story.
Wow. Now, you said you started with a friend. It was two. And I see you're kind of like doing it. What happened there that made you, you know, pick up and start pretty much doing it on your own?
So it really wasn't a choice. As most of us know, our nonprofits are a calling, and you get the urge to start it. And then when you realize how hard it is, you put it down, you put it on your shelf. But 1999, my best friend and I started it. We both were interested in HIV. We both were working in the HIV field. I was working for the federal government, and she was working for a small nonprofit. And we had some successes in the first 10 years, but, you know, it was really hard knocks. It was very, very difficult. We had some limited funding for the first 10 years. And in 2009, my best friend passed away from lung cancer, and I got laid off in 2008. And so it was sort of surreal, and she asked me to continue the nonprofit, and I wasn't even sure that I wanted to continue the nonprofit, but God saw that, you know, I got laid off and the stars aligned, and I decided that I needed to fulfill my mission and my promise to my best friend. And so I started full time in my nonprofit in 2009. When we really had no money. So it was like starting over in 2009. So it was a calling, it was a promise, and it was heart work.
Wow. And, you know, Deitra, what Heart to Hand, can you explain a little bit more what Heart to Hand does?
It would be my pleasure. Heart to Hand is a grassroots, community-based nonprofit organization. We started out as a community outreach an education organization for HIV in 99, like I said. So we had no funding. We wanted to support women in particular at the time. Black women were getting infected with HIV at an alarming rate, and we wanted to do something different. At the time, I was working for the federal government, and I saw women being diagnosed, and it was my job to tell them that they were diagnosed and link them to care. When I was linking them to care, I just saw how impersonal and stigmatizing the process was. And I just knew that we could do better. We wanted to make it a cultural fit for Black women. We wanted to make them empowered and to see that HIV wasn't a death warrant and that they could live a fulfilled life and continue to be healthy. So Heart to Hand started out as a community outreach organization. And we've been able to grow over the last 10 years to include a holistic approach to HIV prevention and care. So right now, the services that we provide care coordination, which includes non-medical case management as well as case management services. And within the non-medical and medical case management services, a person might receive support as well as they might receive emergency financial assistance. They might receive pharmacy assistance, medical transportation, psychosocial services, But what I'm really, really proud of, over the last 4 years, we've been able to open a medical clinic. So now we have all the services that a person who might be at risk for getting infection, as well as they can also get treatment at Hearts and Hands through our medical practice. And even more so over the last 3 months, while we've been in the pandemic, we've been able to acquire another medical practice in D.C. So now you can get HIV testing on our mobile health unit. If you're positive, we can link you to care within 24, 48 hours, and then we support you. And one of the big things about Heart and Hand, and the thing that makes it is unique, is that we serve Black people. We're unapologetic about serving Black people in a way that feels like family. A lot of times our clients, they are rejected by their families. And so we wanted to create a program that felt like they had a support system so that they don't give up, they can live a full life, and we've been able to see that. I have clients who've been HIV positive for over 30 years, and they're living a full life, and that makes me happy.
And that's awesome, because I've had the opportunity and the pleasure to come by your office and see you have staff from doctors to social workers, you name it, and this is all started from a kitchen table. And to where you are now, you know, that's incredible. Now, let me ask you a question. What are some of the major strides that Heart to Hand, you know, as far as business-wise and, you know, your portfolio, money-wise, how has it been for you?
Well, and that's the question that a lot of people ask me. They're like, well, how do we get funding? What does that look like? So we started out, I think we got our first grant in 1999. I think it was $25,000 or $50,000 to the Prince George's Health Department. When you're getting grants, it's about building relationships with those funders. It's about creating a win-win situation for them. And so the first grant we got was for outreach. And all we did was we had our car, and we would go into the neighborhood and pass out education information and talk to people in the community about HIV and stigma. Because back then, the stigma was really bad, and unfortunately, people still stigmatize folks. They think that it's almost like they make people feel like they're untouchables, like, you know, and they make people go in hiding, and people don't tell their family members that they're HIV positive, and those kinds of things. So we've become that support. So we've been able to form a really good relationship with Prince George's Health Department. And I think the thing to note is that when you're forming relationships with your funders, it's about creating a good program with outcomes that they can see. The other partner that we have is DC Department of Health. We've also formed a really good relationship with them where we get a significant amount of funding. And again, your funders have goals that they want to meet. And if you can help them meet those goals, then you're a good partner. And so they know that we are experts in a specific thing, and even now when they get funding for those things like HIV services for women and Black people and things like that, they look to us because we've developed a portfolio of services for that particular population, and we're able to meet them in a way that the health department can't, because we're able to do things that the government may not want to do or may not can do. And so we also have a great relationship with HRSA, which is a federal agency. So we have our local, our regional, and our federal partners. So you want to look at getting partners that are across those categories. And then we do have some private partners. We've gotten funding from Community Foundation of Prince George's County. We've gotten funding from the Philip Graham Foundation. So we've gotten funding from individuals as well. So I think one of the big things is that people, they want to say, can you get me a federal grant? The idea of getting a federal grant as your first grant is probably not going to happen. So you have to build up. If you're starting out a nonprofit, one of the things is that look around your local community to figure out who can you partner with to help them meet their goals so that they can help you meet your goals as well.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's some good stuff. Now, what are some of the challenges that you actually have seen starting the nonprofit, and even as you went along to moving up to where you are today?
Lots of challenges. I think, you know, some of the things that were a challenge is for me in the beginning was I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I think when you go in, of course, when you initially think about starting your nonprofit, you really are excited, you want to help the people, you really are ready to go. So, you know, a lot of times people who start nonprofits, it's really heart work. And I say heart work because, you know, as you know, our tagline for Heart to Hand is a heart that cares with hands to help. And that's probably could be the tagline for a lot of nonprofits because people want, they see a gap in their community and they want to serve that gap. So when you want to serve that gap, you got to think about it in business terms. The compassion and the passion for the work is not going to get the work done. So one of the things that I challenged that I overcome was I had to let go of my ego. And so I had to let go of it being about me and being about the community. And it's not even that you're consciously thinking, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be proud of myself. But as you start putting your sweat, heart, sweat, and tears into it, you start owning the work because it is challenging work, and a lot of times founders will find themselves doing a lot of work by themselves. So I had to get out of my own way to understand that although I was doing the work wasn't about me, and I couldn't take it personal. And so I had to separate the business from my person. And I can tell you that I didn't do that early on. I didn't do that for a while until I started getting capacity building from other organizations. You have to ask for help, I think. So one of the things that I overcame, I had to learn how to lead and hold the mission. What I've learned over the last probably 20 years is that the role of the executive director or the founder is holding the invisible mission. So you have to learn how to lead while you're holding the invisible mission without getting caught up in it, without you owning it so much, because you've got to give leadership to people in terms of, and it's yours, so it makes it hard because your nonprofit is very personal. When you decide that you're going to start a nonprofit, you really become all encompassing it. Like you're really just, you want to, you think about it, you dream about it, all those things, but at the same time, you've got to understand that your nonprofit is a business. So understand that my nonprofit was a business. That was another thing that I had overcome. You know, people think that a nonprofit is different than a business, but a nonprofit is a business. So understanding that and understanding those business rules, things that I've overcome is understanding that doing the work within the nonprofit, like doing the day-to-day work, can get in the way of your leadership. So you have to figure out when you need to be doing the work, when you need to step back and actually write the policies and procedures down and put your fiscal system together and train others to do the work. So it's this give and take. It's this give and take of all of that. And I struggle with some of that day to day because you get into a nonprofit so that you can touch people and you can be in the community. But as a leader, sometimes you have to step back and be the visionary. You have to hold the vision, write it down, train folks to do it as any business owner would. And sometimes that's difficult.
And you know what? And all that you did and what you've learned from your challenges, that you did a wonderful job, because right now, is it safe to tell everyone your nonprofit is bringing in multi six figures? And that's you know, stunning. And, you know, a lot of people can do that. And I know right now today is so much going on, you know, with the two pandemics and everything else. And then, you know, a lot of people had on their heart to do something and to help. You know, nonprofit may be the best way to go. So, you know, you being so successful in your nonprofit, I mean, is it really hard to start a nonprofit business? Would you, you know, tell the listeners if that, for the case, would be hard to start something if they got something in that yearning in their heart to, you know, to do?
Starting a nonprofit itself is not hard. Filling out the paperwork for your state and your federal government agency, it's tedious, but that part is not hard. And so I think there's so many people that have nonprofits already. The challenging part, and I wouldn't say that it's hard, It's that you got to ask the right questions to get to where you want to go. So the hard or the challenging part is setting your clear mission and sticking to it, so that you're not chasing other people's idea. And sometimes it takes a while for you to figure out what problem or what gap am I trying to fill? Because sometimes there's funding out there that's available that's not necessarily in that mission and people are running after it. The clearer you are on the mission that you're trying to do, and the more you stick to that, the more likely you'll get funding. Getting funding is challenging, but it's not rocket science. So I think, with nonprofits, if you set up your nonprofit business to solve a problem and you have your business systems in place and you create partnerships with organizations over time and you build, you've got to be consistent. Again, it's not rocket science, but it's not overnight. And I think that's sometimes people want to see their businesses grow overnight. And just like a for-profit business or nonprofit business is not going to grow overnight, you've got to get clear on that mission, set up those systems, build those partnerships, build leadership within your organization, build your team, and then you're able to do it over time. But you got to be realistic about all of that in terms of how long it's going to take.
Okay. Dietra, I'm going to put a plug in it for a second. I'm going to thank my listeners for tuning in. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with my guest, Dietra Spears Johnson.
Are you a business owner seeking guidance on how to handle your business challenges? Do you feel alone and isolated in your business and in tackling your business challenges? I'm attorney Siobhan Smith, and please join me on my podcast, Tell Me About the Hard Part, where every week we'll be giving you real knowledge for your entrepreneurship journey. The show airs every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Drop in so we can make sure to give you the guidance you need on your entrepreneurship journey.
Hello, this is Pamela Burkhead Jones, career strategist, founder of Proactive Life Coaching and Consulting. In your professional life, are you repeatedly saying to yourself, there has to be more to life than what I'm experiencing now? There has to be a better way of reaching my goals, aspirations, and desires. There is no way I can keep going down this road and maintain a level of satisfaction. This leads you to feeling stuck, overwhelmed, cloudy with uncertainty. I have a coaching program which will stir up your passion and develop a strategy to get you moving on to your next level. Contact me for further discussion. My email is contact@proactivelife.com. Visit me at my website at liveproactively.com, or you can telephone me at 240-682-1343. Looking forward to hearing from you. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We're back with Dietra Spears Johnson. Now, Dietra, before the break, we were talking about getting the nonprofit, starting a nonprofit. And I know some people, they have an idea and they start their they say, I have a nonprofit, I own a nonprofit or whatever. And I do want to kind of get into that a little bit. Now, before when you're starting a nonprofit, there are some things you have to have in place to be considered legitimate, but I'll let you go into more. What are the, especially, let's talk about the board. What is that in, who should be on the board as you're filing for a nonprofit?
When you're filing for a nonprofit organization, you have to, so I'm going to back up a little bit. I'll be jumping around a little bit, but you have to form a corporation in your state. So it's a nonprofit corporation in the state where you live, and it asks you for a couple of things. It asks you for your board of directors, and for your for-profit businesses, it won't ask you for that. So for your nonprofit board of directors, in order to form it, you've got to have at least three positions. You got to have the chairperson, you have to have the treasurer and secretary. In most states, you have to have at least 3 people to start. You can have more people on your board, but to start, to file your paperwork, you at least need those 3 people. One of the things that people don't really understand, and I think Pamela is saying that, you know, you own a nonprofit, or some people think they own a nonprofit. The key thing to note is that no one owns the nonprofit. That is one of the biggest differences between a nonprofit and a for-profit. Nonprofit organizations have founders, not owners. The founders are, a nonprofit are not permitted to make a profit or benefit from the net earnings of the organization. That can be confusing because people think nonprofit means no money. And one of the things I constantly say, nonprofit does not mean no money. When they talk about a nonprofit founder not being able to profit, it means that unlike a for-profit business, a nonprofit founder cannot pay themselves dividends out of the profit of the nonprofit. And nonprofits can have profits. So a nonprofit organization founder can pay themselves for services. So for example, I'm the executive director of my nonprofit organization, and I pay myself as an executive director for my nonprofit organization. And I pay myself based on market rate. And so you look at market rate, like a business, you don't pull things out of the hat. You look at what's going on in the market, and that's how you set your salary. I don't set my salary as a founder. The board sets my salary. So you have to have systems in place, like a for-profit business, to establish salaries and policies. The board has to vote on my salary. The board of directors for a nonprofit is responsible for the governance of the organization, the fiscal oversight. So the board of directors is not necessarily responsible for the program activities of the organization. They're sort of the ones that sit above the founder. So when you're selecting those individuals for your secretary, your president, and your treasurer, keep in mind, those are the holders of the nonprofit. They're the ones that are the leaders of the nonprofit. So founders, your board of directors can fire you as the founder. So just understand that they can, they're the ones that hold the nonprofit. It's a public entity held by the board of directors. Founders, even you can sit, you know, there's controversy about whether or not a founder can sit on the board of directors. Some people, they say that they can't. Some people say they can. If you sit on your board of directors, when they're voting on your salary, when they're voting on things that are related to you, you cannot vote. So there are things in terms of how you can separate yourself from the board of directors, but they're pretty much the founder's boss.
Okay. Now, to get grants and apply for all the, you know, money or even collect money, should you have all of that in place, correct?
So that's the minimum things that you have in place. The 501c tax exempt status is the thing that allows you to apply for certain grants. You may see in the request for proposals that it'll have a section in there. It'll say eligible entities, and the 501c3 nonprofit organization shows up. That means that you can apply. And sometimes it'll say for-profit businesses can apply as well. But being a 501c3 organization will allow you to apply to many grants, but it won't necessarily allow you to get the grant. So do you want me to go and talk about what would help you to be more qualified to get grants? Would that be helpful?
Yes, but I do want to actually kind of get into, that would be good to know, and maybe better for if someone wants to know a lot of that information to contact you. We're going to give your information at the end, because I do want to get into a few more things about the, you know, for people who are still sitting on the fence, you know, they want to do something, they can kind of take the, you know, lead pretty much of trying to do something else and just filling out what their heart desires. So I do want to go into some of the common myths that, you know, people think about surrounding nonprofits.
Okay, I talked a little bit about one big one, I'll give you 5. The founder is the owner. That is one of the biggest myths, and it's hard to talk about because you and I think I got a wake-up call on several occasions, because you're spending nights and days, you're spending your money, you're spending all the things to make this thing happen as you would with a for-profit. And in your mind, of course, you're thinking, okay, this is my organization. And so when you say my organization, that's not really true. And I still sometimes say my organization, but it's not my organization. It is the public mm-hmm. entity, Heart to Hand. It's its own thing. And it took me a long time to kind of separate it from myself. And as I separated it from myself, the more I separated it from myself, the more it grew. I could see it as its own thing. And the bank started seeing it as its own thing. So all these things started to happen. But the founder is not the owner. The nonprofit doesn't have a ownership. The second thing is that the nonprofit can't make money. There's so many different types of nonprofits. The American Red Cross, and you see their budget, they have a $1 billion budget. The NFL mm-hmm. Foundation, $1 billion of budget. And so the big difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit making money is how it uses the profit income. Some nonprofits, they have for-profit businesses that they then put the money back into the organization. So it's just about you putting the money back into the organization to meet your mission. That is the main difference between a for-profit and a nonprofit, is that nonprofits can make money. They just don't pay out dividends to their shareholders. They continue to grow and develop their program. That's the mm-hmm. main thing. Number three, a nonprofit is not a business. That is the main thing I think that holds a lot of people back, is that they don't think that they may not necessarily say they don't think that a nonprofit is not a business, but they don't run their nonprofit like a business. And so you really have to understand that a nonprofit is a business. It just has a different tax code that allows you to accept donations. But it is a business. In order for it to be successful, you have to have all the business rules and guidelines set up in the same way. Number four, that a lot of people are like, I'm going to get this nonprofit and people are going to start donating to me. People are not just going to start giving money because they want to make sure the public and the funders want to make sure that the nonprofit is set up in a way that they can manage the money that they're given, that they can report out on the money that they are giving, and that the outcomes that they say that they can achieve, they really can achieve them. And so there's a lot of oversight with nonprofits. Number five, I think we talked about this a little bit. Nonprofits can hold for-profit businesses. They cannot hold for-profit businesses. Nonprofits can have for-profit businesses under their umbrella. They just need to make sure that the money that comes in is put back into the mission of the organization. So that's five.
Wow. So you saying, say that again. So you said the nonprofit business cannot hold, or say that again, repeat that one.
A nonprofit business can have a for-profit. So for instance,
okay.
I heard yeah. about a nonprofit business that bought a Burger King. They yeah. bought a Burger King and they used the money from the Burger King to fund their nonprofit. And I think, I can talk a little bit about nonprofits don't just have to be funded by grants. So for instance, Heart to Hand, we own a condo. We receive rent mm-hmm. from the condo. We put it back into our organization. So we're looking to do more of those kinds of things so we can be more independent. We will still continue to try to get grants, but we're looking for ways to fund our programs on our own. Another example is our medical practice. We set a medical practice up. We do have a grant for it also for people who can't pay, but we also do billing through insurance companies. So people who have insurance, they come to our organization, we take their insurance and we process their insurance claims so that we can then put the money back into the organization. So I think it's about thinking outside of the box when you think about how to fund your organization. There are a lot of different ways. It's not just by grants.
Yes, and that's good, really good to know that that part, that piece right there. That is really good to know. Now, when you actually are out there and you're talking and people find out that you're a business coach, a nonprofit incubator, and you have a successful nonprofit, what is the most common question that you hear and the advice that you give that person? So I'm sure if a lot of people are asking these questions, and some of my listeners who are kind of think or have considered a nonprofit sometime in their travels or in their life, what is the most common question that you say you hear mostly?
A lot of times I hear folks, they want a grant. They want me to write them a grant. How do I write a grant? They think it's magical to write a grant. You know, how do I get funding? It's always about the funding. So my advice to them is that grant writing starts way before you put pen to paper. You can write 10 grants, but if you don't have the business structure to support what you're writing in that grant, then you're not going to get the grant. And sometimes people will pay other grant writers to write their grant for their organization. And then what happens is sometimes when you write a grant, then the funder will come visit your organization. If what was written in the grant doesn't match what they see, you won't get the grant. So my advice is really focus on setting up your nonprofit in a way that is true to your mission, that is built on sound business practices, that you have written policies and procedures, and you have your basic positions. You have your bookkeeper if you can't afford a CPA. I actually learned how to do QuickBooks. And a lot of times you will, as the nonprofit founder, end up learning a lot of these things. And it's beneficial as you grow because you know what questions to ask the folks that you end up hiring. So you need to figure out what is your accounting or your bookkeeping system. How are you hiring people? What's your HR? What is your HR rules and regulations? And you know, who will you hire? I know in the beginning we just hired or we pulled people in as whoever was able to help us. But earlier on, I would advise them to come up with a plan in terms of looking for volunteers and particular skill sets that they need. And then in terms of getting people to help you, you can find people that are interested in the same thing that you are. And more than likely, it's not the people around you. It's not your family. It's not your friends. Because, you know, they want to help you, but they may not have the skills. And I'll give you a tip. One of the places that we looked was Volunteer Match. It's a national organization that you can go and you can ask for volunteers for particular things. There are people that have signed up to help in different areas. You have to look outside your circle. That is, I mean, I think we stayed in our circle too long. And people want to help or they don't want to help. But you really need to make sure that you have those things, your fiscal, your HR, and then someone who's looking at your program. Even if you're doing it on your own, you need to separate it out that way so that you know what you're doing. There are programs that you can ask for help for capacity building as it relates to understanding what a nonprofit is. A lot of times people start nonprofits and they don't know what it is. So you're trying to write a grant, but you don't really know the rules. So that's the main question that people ask me is, how do I write a grant? How do I get a grant? But even before people start nonprofits, I urge them to learn about it. That's what we did. I mean, I found memos from 1996 that I wrote my mom because I keep binders. And you really need to come up with a filing system so that you can keep all your documents, those kinds of things. But I found a memo way back in 1996 that I started writing my mom about what is a nonprofit. And I didn't know anything about it. So it's just about getting tools, getting that knowledge base, understanding what you're doing and go for it step by step and being consistent.
And you know, and then once the people that you talk to or you've worked with, how do you tell them that, you know, in regards to becoming visible for support and finding funding for the business, what advice do you, the main advice you give them to really get out there so you can get support, so you can get your business up off the ground?
I think one of the things that I think people kind of do it in the opposite of what I suggest. I think sometimes, you know, people go out, they get the shiny website, they get the all the things that make them visible on the outside, but they don't have the solid foundation. I suggest that people get solid on the foundation and build up that way. What I found for Heart to Hand and even with my coaching business is that the more solid I am in terms of delivering what I promise the, you know, my community partners that I deliver, the more visible I am. And so sometimes it looks like you're visible with all your shiny things, but you're not really getting the outcomes you want on the backside. When I say outcomes, I mean you're not winning grants, you're not building partnerships, you're not building your infrastructure, you're not building your team, those kinds of things. So be clear on your mission, develop your solid community partners, join coalitions, and I think that that's one of the main things that I've learned is that you've got to be involved in your cause. So you need to identify mm-hmm. those individuals who are interested in the same cause. Go to those meetings. You meet your politicians. You meet your leaders in a coalition atmosphere. You both are trying to do the same thing. You're not asking them for anything. They're not asking you for anything. But you're building relationships because at the end of the day, it's person to person. Once you're building those relationships, then you can show them what you can do.
Deetra, this has been a very informational show, and you've given out, and I know it's quite more that you can give those listeners who are really, really want to get out there and they want to start a nonprofit. And like I've said before, it's probably going to be a good time throughout, you know, from the months on to start something like a nonprofit because you have so many people who've lost their jobs, you have so many people who are, you know, are right now hurting, and they kind of need, you know, support, build up. So if you got any type of idea in your mind to, you know, it's time to really get off and just take action and start your nonprofit. So how would they get in touch with you, Deetra?
Like Pamela said, I'm Deetra Spears Johnson, and I'm the nonprofit incubator as well as the co-founder of Heart to Hand Incorporated. I'm going to give you my email as well as my Heart to Hand email and then some of my social media. My emails I'm going to give you two is dspearsjohnson@gmail.com. It's dspearsjohnson@gmail.com. The second email is dspearsjohnson@hearttohandinc.org. And I would ask you to visit our website at www.hearttohandinc.org. And if you know, I would be remiss if I didn't say that knowing your HIV status is key. We offer a lot of different prevention activities on our social media, as well as you know, we're all working remotely, but we're still very active in trying to keep everybody safe. We're providing telemedicine HIV care, so go to our website and check that out. Also on Facebook, you can reach me at Deetra Spears Johnson, or you can reach me at the Nonprofit Incubator. And also, Heart to Hand has a Facebook page. It's Heart to Hand Inc. And that's about it. So the other thing that Pam talked about is that if you want to reach out, just send me an email. I'm in the process of putting together another coaching program as it relates to developing your nonprofit. It will be, if you email me, I can send you information regarding that. And it'll be over the next couple of months.
Wonderful. And thank you, Deetra Spears Johnson. This show has been very informative. And I want to thank my listeners for tuning in. And if you'd like to reach out to me, you can reach out to me in three ways. You can contact me at my email at contact@proactivelife.com. Or visit my website at liveproactively.com or call me at 240-682-1343. Looking forward to hear from you. Thank you.